Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests, like Amin, appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Dave McMiniman is going to join us in less than 15 minutes. We'll get his thoughts after having a conversation with a number of Lakers players about the return of the NBA and where they stand right now. Ramona's got a great story out right now on ESPN.com. She spoke to Michelle Roberts, and it's basically Michelle Roberts telling Ramona, answering and asking these questions. Does playing again harm a movement that we absolutely embrace? Can our play highlight and encourage and enhance this movement? That's what players are talking about. They're not fighting about it. They're talking about it. That's what Michelle Roberts told Ramona. So we'll have that. We'll have some thoughts on that from Dave, because I'm sure a lot of the Lakers players are talking about it. I also want to get back to the calls at 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. A lot of people want to weigh in on the conversation we've had throughout the show that we've had with Amin. But real quick, I want to just kind of update people on where we are on Major League Baseball. Basically, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, that by today, right, today, the Players Association in Major League Baseball basically said, all right, enough of this nonsense. Just tell us when and where to report and how many games we're going to play so we can tell our players what we're going to do. If you're going to invoke this commissioner's clause that we have to play 48 or 50 games, so be it. But we're done negotiating. Now, Jeff Passan is reporting that the owners are contemplating on whether they should actually lob one more offer at them, or they should just do what the Players Association wants, which is just the commissioner dictate what they want to do, which, to be honest, would be a little embarrassing that they've gotten to this point. But as I told you last week, I'm kind of in on a 48 or 50 game season, because I think that people will actually be more interested in baseball that way. Maybe not the purists, but I think the casuals, because each game will mean more. But correct me if I'm wrong anywhere in the way I've kind of laid this all out where Major League Baseball is.
Nope, you're absolutely right with everything you said there. It is now under Rob Manfred's hands, and as we all know, he makes great decisions with everything that he does for baseball, so we should be really excited about Rob Manfred having
complete control. I sense sarcasm there.
Just a little bit, yeah. He is probably the worst commissioner of baseball, and that's including Bud Selig. So this has been a terrible...
Wait, you think he's worse than Bud Selig?
He's
a man who went through... Who, by the way, we highlighted a scandal or on a 30 for 30 yesterday, the steroid scandal in the long-gone summer between McGuire and Sosa. You think he's worse than Bud Selig? Because here's what I'll tell you real quick before I get to the calls again. What I would tell you is this. Is that after watching Long Gone Summer yesterday, the 30 for 30 on McGuire and Sosa, I'm kind of with Sammy Sosa on this, which is like, dude, everybody was doing this, but all of a sudden Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa and another select handful of people, including Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens or Alex Rodriguez, we're the ones that are the villains of all of this, even though, you know, when you talk about 30 teams and 25 players, you do the math, right? Like, there's, you know, thousands of players involved, most of them, or if not all of them, were involved in some way, shape, or form, but we're the guys that get singled out. Like, I'm kind of with them. Like, the outrage back then was kind of stupid, but I think a lot of that was because Bud Selig just handled it so poorly.
He did handle it poorly, but I mean, look, steroids
ended up... So you're saying Manfred is worse than that?
Yes, Manfred is by far is way worse than that. He's allowing things to happen in the sport that are entire teams cheating. This is ruining the entire sport itself day after day, making it worse and worse. Where Bud Selig, yes, he may have allowed steroids and then he handled it all terribly, but steroids kind of saved baseball at that time anyway. And also, we're going to look back and be like, oh, look, they're going to be in anyway.
But then he took the guys that saved baseball and made them villains.
Right. Which is, I mean, because look, it's still cheating, but it's specific players that were still cheating. And look, they're all going to make it into the Hall of Fame eventually anyway. It's inevitable.
I hope so. Like, yeah, the fact that Barry Bonds is not in the Hall of Fame is just absurd to me. Like, it's
gigantic-headed cheater. But either way.
It doesn't matter. Even before – I mean, look, I know you're saying that because he's a Giants player and you're just a baseball purist.
He was still great.
Barry Bonds was a three-time MVP when he was, like, a stick figure, okay, with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like, he was a surefire Hall of Famer even then.
Yes, so but then you can start arguing whether or not he even needed to do that then because he was already
the reason he did it. I mean, the story's out. He did it because he saw McGuire and Sosa, and he was like, "What the hell? Are you serious? Like, those guys are gonna—they're not even half the player I am, and those guys are gonna get the headlines." And he did it out of, you know, envy in some ways, and just, you know, and being upset by the fact that those guys were getting headlines that he deserved.
Sure. Look, I'm not here to argue the merits of whether taking steroids was okay or not back then. It's more so a fact that Rob Manfred, what he's doing to this sport of baseball that I love and I know Laura loves as well, is he's completely destroying it. They very well could have been the only sport playing right now. They yes. could have been playing yeah, right. right now.
Yeah.
And with no other sports going on and everybody with all eyes on it, growing the younger generation, because you'd be sitting with your dad or your mom or whoever likes to watch baseball, and the younger generation would have seen just
Abuelo,
baseball.
Abuelita. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he didn't do this is just more problems on top of the problems he made with the Houston Astros decision, with the Red Sox, and now the Yankees too. So it's just getting out of control bad.
Okay, so out of control bad. And you know what else is out of control bad? Last thing before we get back to the calls is the fact that it leaked that they did like a deal that's like worth billions of dollars with Turner Sports, worth $470 million per year for the next 8 years, a 40% increase for their playoff games on Turner Sports. Turner keeps the rights to the LCS, the two division series and the wild card game. The regular season game too. They do have that weekly regular season game. But basically, a multi-billion dollar deal comes out while they're arguing with players over pennies on the dollar. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it could not have come out at a worse time for them.
How do you allow these things to leak if you're baseball? That's on Rob Manfred. You're the commissioner.
It is
I don't
stupid.
Care if the owner did it. It's just it more really, problems.
It really is dumb. All right, let's get to the phones because we have people holding on patiently, and we appreciate those people who hold on as we appreciate the people not only who call in, who tune in each and every day. And again, this show, we try to build a community. That doesn't mean everyone in the community is always going to agree, right? It means that we want to have a dialogue. It's kind of like what Michelle Roberts said to Ramona, right, that the players are talking about, does playing again harm a movement that they absolutely embrace? Can their play highlight, encourage, or enhance that movement? And that's what players are talking about. They're not fighting about it. They're talking about it. And that's what we're hoping to do here on this show each and every day, regardless of what it is we're talking about. But in this particular instance, I think it's way more important than anything we normally talk about, including what Greg and I just spent the last 5 minutes discussing. But let's go to Alfred in Long Beach. Alfred, thank you so much for being so patient. First of all, let's start there. And please go ahead and tell us what your thoughts are.
So I think my thoughts are if the NBA and NFL, I think the players should protest and not have a season because those owners are still encouraging systematic oppression. Right. And the reason why I say that is because 3 years ago, it was wrong for Kaepernick to take a knee. Now it's okay. They're controlling how they can protest. It's all right for NBA players just to wear shirts. But what else are they allowed to do when they protest? You see what I'm saying? There's still
Alfred, Alfred, I can only speak to the NBA because I don't know I'm with you on the NFL. They're clearly 4 years too late. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're in agreement on that. But I can't speak to specifics on the NFL because I don't know the inner workings of the NFL the way I know the NBA. You know what I mean? So
correct. But see, now they're saying it's okay to take a knee, but it wasn't okay to take
in the NFL. You're right,
So are they controlling? Are they controlling these protests? See, you guys were talking about Kyrie. Maybe Kyrie wanted to wait until he got on his grand stage to present his protest. Why does he have to protest the way everybody else does?
No.
That's systematic oppression.
Listen.
He wanted to protest the way he did. He didn't have to do it on the 5th. He wanted to wait till he got to Orlando.
Right. But I think that what even other players are bringing up, whether it's Kendrick Perkins, right, or Ed Davis, who plays for the Jazz, Like, what they're saying is that they don't believe that he's being genuine to the cause. They believe that he's being emotional based on the NBA telling him, oh, no, you can't go because you're hurt and we want to limit the amount of people that are in the bubble based on safety concerns, which has been their number one priority on this from the get-go. So I can I can tell you that part of it, at least the safety part of it, is absolutely true. I don't know if what Kendrick Perkins and Ed Davis is true because I don't know what's in Kyrie's head. You know what I'm saying? But
100%, I agree with you.
Right. But so I don't know that. But you have to. What I would say to that is this though: it is weird that he voted for it a week earlier and was fine with it, and then changes course, and then it comes out later that it's. Other players believe that it's because he wasn't allowed there. Like, what I'm saying is it doesn't help his messaging, even though I agree to an extent with his messaging. But what I would say is whether it's LeBron or Austin Rivers or Garrett Temple, who's also part of the NBA Players Association, like, I think that what you're saying makes sense. They're trying to steer them in a specific direction, right, on how they can protest. I get what you're saying there. But what I would say is, unlike the NFL, Alfred, the NBA, particularly, okay, under Adam Silver, has been way more of a partnership, okay, than it ever has been. Because it wasn't that way necessarily always with David Stern, is what I would say. And with David Stern, he was certainly someone who would want to be an ally with the players, but at the end of the day, he understood he worked for the owners. I've never seen a commissioner in any sport behave the way Adam Silver behaves in regards to his relationship with players. So I just think that he's built a lot of equity, Adam Silver, to say to the players and the Players Association, like, look, if you don't want to come, that's cool, okay? You don't have to come and play. But there are going to be ramifications that I can't control if you don't come and play, which is finances. But he's always been very open to allowing the players to demonstrate and express themselves in any way they see fit. Like, I don't believe that he's trying to control the way they protest, at least not in the NBA. The NFL is a different story.
I see what you're saying, but how far has the extent of the protest been gone in the NBA? It's been T-shirts and talking on Instagram, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, here's the deal. Like, it's systematic oppression that you got NBA players who are African-American arguing amongst each other right now. And you guys are promoting that. Like,
well, no, I'm not promoting it. I'm reporting it. And I think that's different, okay? I'm not trying to promote anything. I am simply reporting it so you and I can have this dialogue. You know what I mean? Like, that is the position that I take, and that's the role that I take. But what I would say is they're not fighting over, at least according to Michelle Roberts, who is in charge of the Players Association. That's what she's saying. She's saying it's a dialogue, kind of like what you and I are having.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. I just think, and like, you know, we all have our opinion. I think that they're controlling the way that these athletes.
Okay.
You know, I like the NFL, it's awful now. Taking a knee during an anthem absolutely means nothing because now it's allowed. You know, it doesn't serve the same purpose. You know,
yeah, I get that.
Has to be on a grand scale. Like, it needs to be to the point to where it hurts financially. It hurts. Like, what's going on? Like, other than that, all there's going to be is the same thing. We're going to be in the same situation 10 years from now.
Right. You Alfred, go ahead. Finish up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, like, I feel like the black community always steps around and we never jump in. It's time for us to jump in. You know, we have to start boycotting things. Like, here, I'll give you a perfect example. Stephen A. Smith is a loud, boisterous man. That's the stereotype of a black man. What if it was switched? What if Max Kellerman was a loud one and Stephen A. Smith was a quiet one? Will it still sell? Who knows? But that's systematic oppression. By definition, you know, we got to start changing what we are as a culture.
I don't think that every person, like, I mean, ESPN is it's got a lot of different people on it. I think Bomani Jones is one of the smartest people we have at ESPN. I don't care what race or color he is. And I think that he expresses his message in a way that very few people can. And he's not Stephen A. Smith. He's not out there acting. But Stephen A. Smith, I can tell you, Alfred, and thank you for the call because I got to run because I'm way over the break. Stephen A. Smith, but thank you. And I appreciate your thoughts. Stephen A. Smith, that way he talks on First Take, that's who he is when he's off camera too. Because I have had very heated discussions about sports with Stephen A. Smith, and that's just who he is. Like, I'm not, Stephen A. Smith is not being disingenuous, and I'm not saying that's what you were saying, but if anyone believes, even wanted to glean off of that, that was what the case was, I'm telling you that's not the case. But I appreciate it. All right, we have a 2-minute break. Dave McMiniman is going to join us. He's going to tell us where the Lakers are on all of this as a team. He's spoken to a bunch of the players. Robert Griffin III, if you did not get a chance to hear this interview, I did it on Saturday on ESPN Radio with Ariel Helwani, our MMA guy, who we love, who's a friend of the show. He and I spoke to RG3 on Saturday about all of this, everything that's going on in the world right now, and it was an incredible conversation. So we'll have that at 11:40. Dave McMiniman in 2 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. It's time for Straight Talk Wireless. Our man Dave McMiniman spoke to a number of Lakers players about the restart of the NBA season. We'll hear from him in just a moment. So Robert Griffin III, I mentioned earlier, man, I had an incredible conversation with him. Ariel Helwani and I hosted on ESPN Radio on Saturday. You're going to want to listen to it. It's about basically everything that's going on in this country right now. And we did talk some football with him as well, but it was just an enlightening conversation. Like, it's the best way to describe it. We'll have that in 20 minutes, so stick around. But let's talk to Dave McMiniman first, friend of the program, ESPN NBA insider, Lakers insider. So, Dave, you got a chance to speak to a number of Lakers players about the restart, about Kyrie's phone call where 80 players were on board, and according to reports that Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley were seemingly on Kyrie's side about a potential restart. What were those conversations like with the players that you spoke to about restarting the league?
Well, George, it was more the context of restarting the league with a Lakers team that we've known since training camp had this natural camaraderie with one another, that had this off-court connected tissue of dinners and group texts and buying each other gifts and all, right on down the line. And it was trying to see if that has been compromised over this 3-month hiatus. Has it been compromised by players like Dwight and Avery taking a different stance than the rest of their teammates that have been vocal about wanting to go resume the season in Orlando? People like Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, Jared Dudley, and LeBron James have all made it clear that let's play some basketball. And the message I was receiving, I talked to two separate Lakers about this, was that, listen, there's no divide here. And, maybe some of the silver lining to having the season not starting for another 6 weeks from now is that there's still time to figure this thing out, both within our locker room, within the Lakers as a team, and within the entire league. And, I think that was also reflected a little bit in the reporting I did talking to Charles Briscoe, Dwight Howard's agent, where, his point, speaking on behalf of his client, Dwight, was that initial statement, if you were reading into it and wondering about Dwight Howard playing basketball, you're missing the point. Dwight is just trying to bring as much attention to racial injustice right now, and at some point, basketball will be on his mind, and then he'll make decisions about his future this season at that point.
Dave McMiniman joining us here. What is your sense on the fact that LeBron was not part of that call that Kyrie had? There were 80 players. I know it went out to the invites went out to everyone. Should we look into the fact that he was not part of the call?
Yeah, I think it's curious, but it also wasn't 400 players, right? It was still a small faction of the league. You're talking about maybe a fifth of the league's players at most, and obviously, LeBron, I'm sure, got a sense of what was going to be coming on the call. And he had also already, expressed his unwavering support for the NBA plan to return to play this season. And he also expressed his interest and devotion to furthering the cause of his people, you know, by doing more than a vote earlier in the week, and not just talking about trying to affect social change, actually doing it. And that was example, you know, right on down the list from more than a vote seems like a big undertaking. You're trying to organize athletes and entertainers around the country in different cities where they can, you know, go connect with the people on the ground and try to combat voter suppression and try to educate people about how to get registered to vote and the different ways they can do so. That coming on the heels of starting a school in his hometown that is trying to target at-risk youth in order to give them a better chance to enter into the world with a proper education when they're, you know, 18 years old. And if they get through his high school program, being able to get a free college education. So now they're being able to enter the world at 22 years old with a college degree, the confidence that comes with that education and the ability to be a productive member of society. LeBron's kind of already figured out that stuff. In a way that he feels like he is using his platform to affect the greater good. And I'm not speaking on behalf of him, but I think his absence from that call, you could put the two and two together and say, well, okay, he's already said he wants to play, and he's already doing things that people on the call are talking about in terms of what can we do. Why does he need to be on that call?
No, fair enough. And by the way, I think you've already answered my next question, but have you heard what former NBA Players Association President Antonio Davis said about LeBron this weekend?
Fill me in.
Okay, I'm going to let you hear it. I'm going to let you hear his words, and I think you kind of already outlined it, but here's what Antonio Davis said this weekend on ESPN Radio.
I think there will be a point in time where he has to come out and take a stance. You know, we've heard his tweets, but I think he'll have to come out and say exactly what he said in those tweets, take a stance one way or another, and keep it moving. I know for him, like, hey, I want to play because we've got a chance to win it all. So I get that. But I think he has to show his passion about what's really going on, the topics, because he has sons. He has little black boys in his household. So, and he has a family that he has to take care of. So it'll be interesting to see what he comes out. But I think he just has to come out as a man, as a leader of this league, and just take a stance one way or another.
Dave, do you think it's important for LeBron to just vocalize this, like on a video or something, or what he's done is enough?
Well, I'm surprised to hear that clip from Antonio Davis. Is anyone curious about where LeBron stands with these things? Is anyone unaware? I mean, I'm just wondering now for myself because I'm so steeped in his, you know, grassroots efforts and the ways he's used his platform to vocalize these points in years past. I've covered the teams he's played for six seasons now. Maybe I'm taking it for granted. In my estimation, he's not only being clear as day about where he stands and showing the world what he does with the platform, but he's been consistent with it, and you know it's been going on for years. I don't know. I just don't understand. Like the more than a vote news was what, last Tuesday,
right?
I mean, did Antonio Davis already forget about that? Or did he not see it? I don't understand. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It's right. That's why I said you pretty much laid it all out for me in the previous answer. But I was curious what you would make of that, because yeah, it just seems odd. And maybe, you know, maybe he wants him to, you know, post a video or whatever, or speak in a public forum in front of a camera. Like, I think he wants him to vocalize it. And look, maybe that would help in some way, shape, or form, but I feel like the message is the message. Like, it doesn't matter whether it's written in a tweet or it's posted on Instagram as a video. Like, I still think that ultimately the message is the message.
I mean, LeBron has I'm just looking at his Instagram right now. He has 66.4 million followers on Instagram. It's a huge platform, a huge potential for influence. Oftentimes during the season, we see him posting his latest Nike sneakers, right? And that's part of the, you know, benefit of having that big of a platform. And I'm sure it makes his corporate sponsors happy that he can do that. I think his last, nine posts, one's about, you know, being a proud father of his 13-year-old son. One's him wearing an Equality t-shirt. One is a ad campaign by his company, Uninterrupted, pointing out the hypocrisy of some of the things that you know, black athletes are subject to, things like shut up and dribble. There's the Blackout Tuesday post, All Black Square. There was the shared post that all of his teammates put up. If you ain't with us, we ain't with y'all. I don't know. I could go on. I mean,
yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Has he been silent? I'm questioning myself. Am I reading too much into it?
No. I would agree with you. I think that maybe that's one of those. Antonio Davis is just a little old school, right? And wants the hear the actual words, as opposed, he doesn't understand the significance of social media or the power of social media, right? I think that could just be it. It doesn't have to be any deeper than that, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's possible. So let me ask you some actual basketball stuff here in regards to the Lakers. What do we know as far as the timeline for if we do move forward with this, right? What do we know about a timeline of getting guys back on a practice court together as a group?
So a week from today, June 22nd, is kind of the suggested day, preferred day by teams to be back in market. Starting June 23rd, they're going to be testing players, staff, coaches that will be on the list for those teams to go down to Orlando with coronavirus testing every other day, leading up to July 7th, when, you know, teams will leave their market to go to Orlando. So in between, you know, the 23rd and the 30th, get guys back in market, quarantine if they have to, you know, start to receive testing every other day. And then come the 30th, you have your training camp. You have a 1 week training camp in El Segundo. And, you know, they hope to have all 15 of their players plus their two-way players there for a one-week training camp before they head down to Orlando.
How, and maybe you haven't had these conversations yet, but what is the expectation of what a training camp could look like?
So that's a great question, George, and it's actually something that's been posed to me, because right now, you know, the Lakers practice facility has been open up for, you know, I don't know, roughly a month, and you have to sign up for regimented time. You get 90 minutes and then you got to get out of there. You have one assistant coach with a player, and that coach is wearing a mask and wearing gloves, and, you know, that means they can't be hitting you with your pad, or they can't be, like, you know, really having body to body contact. There are players in a major metropolis like Los Angeles that have better setups than that without the strict supervision or the strict timeline. So, you know, players like LeBron James and Anthony Davis have gyms where they're able to go, and they've been able to go and play for several hours and play 2-on-2 and play 3-on-3 without breaking the coronavirus guidelines that are put in place for that gym, because the gym is not a part of the NBA. Until the NBA releases those guidelines of what training camp will look like, whether it can actually be real basketball, I don't think you're going to see a rush of players returning to El Segundo. I think they could be in market, but kind of continuing to do things behind the scenes rather than through the official NBA process, because they feel they can get more work done the other way.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense in the world. It is going to be fascinating. Like, I think that all of this, just the way they're going to have to handle things, you know, in-house and the testing. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, the testing will begin once everyone arrives at their own facilities, right?
Yeah, I would assume it would be done at the facility. That's what the Lakers have done thus far. You know, their earlier testing that the team did, you know, everyone drove to the practice facility. They got the test done while they were still in their car. So I think it would be the same procedure that they followed before. But again, like, if everyone's not back in market prior to June 30th, if the June 30th start of the training camp, I imagine they would still begin with whatever players are back in market. And actually, I've been told the vast majority of Lakers players have returned to LA at this point. There are still some that are out of market, Dwight Howard included, but the vast majority have returned.
Dave McMiniman, ESPN NBA insider, Lakers insider. Dave, always a pleasure, brother. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, George.
You got it. There he is, Dave McMiniman. All right, we'll open it up to you guys. Phone calls, 877-710-ESPN. Again, in about 5 or 6 minutes, we're going to hear from RG3. Ariel Helwani and I, our friend and MMA insider, the best in the business, we did a show together on ESPN Radio, and we spoke to RG3 about all the stuff that's going on in our country right now. It was an incredible, unbelievable, enlightening conversation with RG3. We did talk some football, too, but you're going to want to hear it. Just trust me when I tell you, man. You're going to want to hear this. So we'll have that, plus Charles Barkley weighs in on the Kyrie situation and the restart of the league. We'll hear from Charles on the other side. We are back in 3.5 minutes. Sit down over here on 710 ESPN. Robert Griffin III, did an interview with him on Saturday, myself and Ariel Helwani. It was unbelievable. It was incredible, really enlightening about everything that's going on in the country right now. And we talked some football too. We're going to have that for you in less than 5 minutes. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Don't forget, Thank You Thursdays continue, presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone working as a healthcare provider, frontline worker, and you want to nominate him or her today, we're giving away a $500 gift, thank you gift to that person. You can email us at ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com with their first, last name, city, and occupation, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter, including the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. As I mentioned, every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift that includes a $200 service to a Valvoline Instant Oil Change and 3 $100 gift cards, one to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and the last one to Shooteria.com. So thank you, Thursdays. And don't forget, tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast with our friend Mina Kimes, bringing you a deep dive into a single story of one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review the ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. So I mentioned earlier that Charles Barkley weighing in on the Kyrie and Dwight Howard situation. He was on Get Up this morning with Mike Greenberg and Jay Williams. Here's what Charles Barkley had to say.
I think it'd be stupid to not play for two reasons. Number one, if they don't play, they're going to be out of sight, out of mind for the rest of the year. There won't be no cameras following. And, you know, LeBron is probably the most famous athlete in the United States. He won't be visible anywhere. And so us out of sight, out of mind. Also, these guys got to realize this money going to come back, and they're going to lose billions of dollars that the players could use to go into their own communities and do some great stuff. So it's not good on any front. I have no idea what Kyrie and Dwight are talking about, but it'll be a catastrophic mistake not to play.
Yeah, look, again, we've had a lot of different opinions on this. I tend to side on Charles's side. I just think that it's going to hurt the long-term ability of players to make money, which means that this... Look, the political machine is moved by money. And having players that are millionaires focused on this cause, not to mention that the league is obviously very amenable. I mean, not even amenable. Open to having any sort of demonstration with players and allowing them... And I know in the past we've had callers that called in and said, well, they've done the T-shirts and they've done this and they've done that and it hasn't really stuck. Well, that's not to say that this won't go a step further with Adam Silver because of his openness and his relationship with the players and the Players Association. Just because what you've seen in the past hasn't necessarily translated doesn't mean that it won't moving forward and it won't be more significant. And by the way, the demonstrations will be more significant than even just that. Let me grab Matt in Redondo Beach real quick before we get to RG3 and that interview. Matt, what do you got?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. To me, I've been listening for a while, and that means I've been thinking about a lot of different things, but I'll try to keep it concise. You know, I think Kyrie is feeling the brunt of everybody's frustration because he's not going along with the show. And the idea that he should have he changed his mind in 1 week is ridiculous. You know, people saw George Floyd murdered, and they changed their mind instantaneously about systemic police brutality. So, like, you know, this idea that you can that Kyrie is not expressing himself correctly, that's the same.
Matt, I'm not saying that.
I'm not saying that you are. I'm not saying that you are. I'm saying that what Alfred was spot on, your caller from Long Beach, I believe. You know, you can't tell the oppressed how to voice their grievances. And right now it's all ticky-tack because everybody who comes out and says Kyrie's wrong right now has a vested financial interest.
No, that's fair. That's fair, Matt. And I got to run because I'm up against this hard out here because I got to get to this RG3 interview. But thank you. We could discuss it a little further on the other side. And look, I discussed a number of those things in relations to the NFL with RG3. Here's that conversation. Myself, Ariel Helwani, Robert Griffin III.
I think it'll be stupid is not play for two reasons. Number one, if they don't play, they're going to be out of sight, out of mind for the rest of the year. There won't be no cameras following. And, you know, LeBron is probably the most famous athlete in the United States. He won't be visible anywhere. And so us out of sight, out of mind. Also, these guys got to realize this money going to come back, and they're going to lose billions of dollars that the players could use to go into their own communities and do some great stuff. So it's not good on any front. I have no idea what Kyrie and Dwight are talking about, but it'll be a catastrophic mistake not to play.
All right, that was an accident. We played the wrong cut there. Let's get to my conversation with Robert Griffin III. Okay, apparently it's not ready yet. But anyway, Ariel Helwani, myself, on Saturday on ESPN Radio, had a really in-depth conversation about everything that Matt just talked about, everything that every caller has talked about today, and including the stuff we've been discussing in relations to the country and specifically the NFL and how they're trying to kind of make amends for what's happened here over the last couple of years as they've dropped the ball, literally and figuratively, when it came to Colin Kaepernick. Here's our conversation with Robert Griffin III about that and a little football as well. We have a special guest, Robert Griffin III, Heisman Trophy winner, NFL Rookie of the Year, Pro Bowler, now with the Baltimore Ravens joining us here. Robert, thank you so much for taking the time. We know that you've been certainly very outspoken with all the matters that are going on in the world right now, as people should be. What do you make of what you're seeing, though, right now in regards to the protests and in regards to all the different backgrounds of people that are coming together at this particular juncture?
Hey, guys, just want to say thanks for having me on, and you started off hot with the questions, and really it's been phenomenal to see how many people have gone out, protested, and how many people have spoken up. The momentum for change right now is probably something I've never seen in my lifetime, and you know, that's only been 30 years, and I think people are really starting to pay attention, and we can enact some great change over these next couple of years that our children will be very proud of.
Robert, as I'm sure you saw, Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti posted a very, what I thought, heartfelt video talking about everything that's going on. What was your reaction when you saw that?
Well, I was part of the video, so I kind of knew what was going to happen. And we really just wanted to open up the floor for the conversations. Guys' voices need to be heard. And I think sometimes as a professional athlete, when you're in that top 1% of money makers in the U.S., people think that you don't experience oppression throughout your life. They think that you're disconnected from what's going on in the communities. And these are the communities that all of us grew up in. So because we've gone through that and we make it out, we understand that we have to give back and we have to continue to remember where we came from. And I think you can see that littered throughout the video with the passion and the enthusiasm and the stories that you hear from all the guys. And it was awesome that, you know, Mr. Bisciotti was was willing to listen and was willing to put himself in the forefront of this conversation. You know, and a lot of people don't want to do that. You know, it's always been about the brand or about the sponsors or about losing money. But this isn't a political issue. You know, human rights is not a political issue. And I think for far too long in this country, inequality has been too prevalent when our country was founded on equality for all.
Robert Griffin III joining us here, Baltimore Ravens. I mean, well said. Obviously, I'm with you wholeheartedly. It isn't a political issue. This is about humanity. And how best can one continue to drive that home, Robert?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question I get the most often is, how can I help, right? How can I do something to, you know, end racism or end inequality? And I don't think any one person has the direct answer. But it starts with yourself, right? You have to check yourself. You have to check your family, your friends, the people you associate with, to make sure that they're all in line. Like, you're not letting anything slide that you know isn't right, right? You have to confront everything, address everything, so that we can start eliminating some of these things that are too prevalent in our culture, you know, in the next generation, right? Well, my foundation, RG3 Foundation, we're selling bands, right? We're selling shirts and masks to try to raise funds to go into the cities and go into these communities and work with the local and state governments to enact change. And that's part of it, right? It takes money to try to enact change, especially in a capitalist market like the United States of America. But you can enact probably even more change by just checking the circle that you're with to make sure that you're not allowing anything to fly. You're not allowing things that you would normally just turn the other cheek, right? You would just say, oh, it's not affecting me. It's not changing my day-to-day life, so I'm not going to step up and say something for that person who can't do it by themselves. I've said this multiple times, but it's not people who look like me who are going to change the course of America. It's people who look like the majority. And to be quite frank, that's white people. White people have to stand up and speak on behalf of the minority, which is people of color in America.
Robert, as George said, you've been very vocal on Twitter, and I think it's worth mentioning that you've been selling handbands with proceeds going to Black Lives Matter initiatives. And I really appreciate everything that you have been saying and tweeting about and posting on your social media accounts. I'm curious, if you don't mind me asking, how did you feel when you heard what Drew Brees said about the kneeling and his subsequent apologies afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a hot button, you know, topic, and in today's, you know, age with everything that's going on, everyone's speaking up about everything. And when I heard him initially say it, I just thought, you know, everything I've ever heard about Drew Brees is that he's a great guy, you know, that he's constantly in the community, that he's given a lot to the community in New Orleans, which many people don't know, but that is where my family is from. My entire family lives in New Orleans, Louisiana. My mom and dad were both born and raised in Louisiana. And I can tell you that when he made that statement, somebody in my family was upset, because he knows it, and I think he's apologized and he's addressed it since, but he just missed the ball on what the real issue was, right? You know, for 4 years since Kaepernick took a knee, everybody's had an opportunity to kind of address what he was protesting, address what he was not protesting, and what the protests stand for and don't stand for. And I think that Drew kind of reiterated all of the negativity and all the wrong angles about that protest. And people who are out there in the streets protesting, marching, coming together, they heard that, and it hurt them. You know, it hurts when one of the stars of the NFL, one of the stars of the world, really, says something that is out of touch with the rest of humanity. And I think he realized that. I think his family realized that. I know for sure his PR team realized that, and they tried to rectify it. And I think that's what hurt the most. It wasn't that, you know, we don't agree with your opinion. It's not that we don't want you to say anything contrary to the movement. It's just that we need you to address the movement. We need you to address what is being protested. We need you to address what is being done wrong. And I think he has addressed that now. And, you know, fortunately,
I don't play with Drew Brees and his teammates do. And, you know, Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara and all those guys have forgiven him. And, you know, hopefully he can continue to do some work in the community that will get the community to forgive him as well.
Robert, we mentioned at the top the video of yourself and Steve Bisciotti and his message. What is your expectation of other owners in this league who should be speaking up right now?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any expectation, to be honest with you. I only can focus on what I can control. And I think that each owner has to just look at themselves and, you know, look on the inside and ask themselves, are they affected by what's going on? And I don't mean financially. I don't mean, you know, whether or not we're going to have a football season or if there's going to be fans in the stands. I just mean from a human being standpoint, right? We're all human beings. And if you can't say Black Lives Matter, you know, then I think you have to reassess your own values. It's not that all lives don't matter, but how can all lives matter if one section of those lives has been, you know, experiencing social injustice, inequality, discrimination, and racism for 400 years? So we have to get to the point where we can say all lives matter, but right now we can't say that. So we need you to say Black Lives Matter and then show that that means something to you and show that all human beings are valued and are worthy. So I don't have an expectation of the other owners. That's not a call to action for the other owners. I just think they have to make that decision for themselves, right? You don't have to go out in the street and protest. You decide to go out and protest. So if they decide to, you know, post a video or do something about it, you know, monetarily or get out there in the streets and walk with the protesters, you know, I think that's their decision.
Of course, in the midst of all of this, we also have the pandemic that's going on, and your head coach, John Harbaugh, said on Thursday that it was, quote-unquote, humanly impossible to adhere to all the guidelines that the NFL has put out in terms of, you know, everything that needs to be done once the practice facilities are open. Did you hear his comments in full, and do you agree with Coach Harbaugh?
No, I definitely heard his comments in full, and, you know, Ariel, thank you. You know, you do a lot of work with the UFC. And I don't know how, you know, it's been able to come back so quick. But, you know, just imagine, you know, you have two guys in a ring, right? Three guys in a ring if you include the ref. And they're fighting, right? And, you know, they go through all the testing. And, you know, they find out that neither of them has COVID-19 coronavirus. And then they go home and they just compete, right? And they're sweating, bleeding, punching each other, kicking each other, grappling, and all these things. Well, now imagine, you know, now you have 22 guys on the field. Couple referees. There's so many more people that go into putting on a fully televised NFL game day than there are that go into putting on a fully televised UFC event. And I think that's kind of the struggle right now, right? The coronavirus, COVID-19 is a serious thing. And what many people aren't talking about is the fact that in the NFL, a lot of our big guys, right, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, these are the guys who are most at risk to catch the coronavirus because they have these these disabilities or these conditions, you know, by the nature of being 6'7", 360 pounds, right? And they're the ones who are experiencing the severe reactions to the virus. So it may be humanly impossible to try to put on an NFL season like it used to be. And I heard what Coach said about that. About meeting rooms, about, you know, meeting time on the field, whether or not we're going to be in the building or not for our meetings. How can we social distance in a locker room? All these different things. But at the same time, we, you know, you may have to try to do that to just make sure our guys stay safe. So I know one thing, Coach is completely focused on winning. We're completely focused on winning. We're doing everything we can to make sure we're ready for the football season. It's just going to be a weird year. You know, but I got my coaches back 100%. If he feels like it's humanly impossible, then maybe we just have to do some otherworldly things to get ready to go.
Robert Griffin III joining us here. Robert, before we let you go, how much input have you had in helping Lamar Jackson? I mean, listen, you came onto the scene, you're rookie of the year. You've been someone who's been in this league for a long time. He certainly is an ascending player. What is that relationship like, and what is his growth like?
Yeah, I would say this first and foremost. I don't take credit for anybody else's success. You know, LJ is my guy. I love him to death. We work together. You know, he came in from day one. He was constantly asking questions. And if he wasn't asking questions, I was just trying to provide as much input as I could for him. And the biggest growth I feel like he made from year one to year two, not necessarily on the field, because, you know, he's the reigning NFL MVP. You know, he went out there and he did his thing. But for me and him personally, the biggest thing, the biggest change from year one to year two was, in year one, it was more of me trying to help him and trying to talk to him and go to him. And in year two, I just noticed a drastic difference in him coming to me and asking me questions and talking about reads and talking about coverages and how we do this and how would you do that. And it just showed me that, you know, sometimes when you first meet somebody, you don't know, right? You don't know how they're going to be. You don't know if they got your back. You don't know if you can trust them. And I think I earned his trust between year one and year two. And that was
So that was Robert Griffin III. Unfortunately, since we had a little technical snafu, we're going to miss the last, you know, 45, 50 seconds of it because we have to go to break. So, and we have to end the show today. But he was awesome. I hope you enjoyed that. It was great. Ariel was great in it as well, interviewing with me. He was fantastic too. So thanks to that. Thanks to Laura and Greg. Thanks to Robert Griffin. Thanks to Ariel. Thanks to Dave McMiniman and Amin. Thanks to you guys for calling in today, specifically those who called in. Thank you so much. Always those who tune in appreciate it. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. See you.